Hello, welcome back to Blacker Couch Reviews. I'm your host, Christina. Rishoners of the world, unite. We were fed so good that I honestly didn't even feel like going back for seconds, but I did, and thirds and fourths. We're not going to talk about how many times I've watched this episode. Just know it is officially my favorite episode of The Walking Dead. Yes, we're talking about The Ones Who Live, episode 4, What We, written by Danai Gurira herself, directed by Michael Slavis. This was a phenomenal episode, but I kind of figured it was going to be the minute I saw who wrote it. I really like that this episode encompassed not just some of the ideas that I had previous about what Rick may be doing or what his mindset is, that it completely didn't go in the direction I expected, but it also didn't go in the predictable route of many people's speculation, which is he'll find out about RJ and then everything will be better, because that would not have been realistic and it would not have been good storytelling. Simply put, there's a lot going on in Rick's mind that the revelation of having another kid would not simply cure. And I'm glad that Danai was smart enough, because of course she was, to see that this was a process and it needed to be a process to bring Rick back. And it needed to happen in the way that I expected it needed to. You know, he's away from the consistent threats in his life, the ideology. He's finally in a safe place where Michonne uses every tool in her arsenal to not only confront him, but also, I think, confront a lot of things about herself. And she does that by breaking down a couple of her own walls and expressing emotions that one would expect to be there but has not been spoken. So we're going to do a new format this week. We're just going to, or I'm going to give you a quick recap of the episode, and then we'll kind of go into my thoughts about it. So after jumping out of the helicopter, which they were flying low. Of course they were, because that seems to be the CRM's playbook. But there's a huge storm going, and while I may not be a helicopter pilot, I don't think getting up there in those storm clouds is a good idea. So Michonne ends up saving their life, and they fell into a river, and they end up finding this community center that looks very modern because they have amenities, it still has power, but the place is abandoned. And this is the setting of our epic showdown between these two very stubborn but loving people. And the issue becomes not so much having all of the words that need to be said of what the threat is, why Michonne threw him out of a helicopter, we needed a timeout.
Get your man.
Then it transitions to a scenario in which they are in a buckling building after the CRM shows up, because their helicopter ended up crashing and the CRM destroys all evidence of their existence. So because of them shooting a missile to get rid of the helicopter crash, it now is affecting the structural integrity of the building, and they need to battle zombies that are also coming into the building while battling each other. It is in three different settings. First, they're in the apartment room until Michonne offers an ultimatum, and then she leaves. But then they go through the building until they eventually get back to the apartment room, where they get intimate in a way that Michonne ends up taking advantage of, and it's that intimacy, that reclaimed intimacy, that sets the tone for Michonne to finally get through to the root cause of why Rick feels he needs to go back to the CRM. And while he has a lot of reasons that seem plausible, possibly, it's not Michonne knows the ultimate reason. There is no purpose in going back. All of these maybes, you know, they just aren't the truth. And she knows Rick enough to know that he's not telling her the truth. Worse, she knows that he's not even telling the truth to himself, which leads to one of the most beautifully acted scenes I've seen in quite some time between Andy and Danai, where Rick finally, I wouldn't say get his groove back, but he's finally removed. She's extricated him from the paralyzing position he was in to allow him to finally find the hope again to want to go home, which is where they end the episode. The episode is very dialogue heavy, but it keeps the pace moving great. I love how they used the Alexa type of announcement, temperature rising, temperature malfunction, to express the mood. The crumbling building, that seemed to be a bit of a sticking point. Like, you guys, there was a sense of urgency, but it's part of the narrative in the story, so that did not distract me as much as it did others, because it was a symbol of breaking down Rick Grimes while the building was also breaking down the relationship and getting at the crux of it. So that until they did that, I knew the building was going to be fine. They had their moment of, oh shit, this is a crumbling building, when Michonne got stuck under the chandelier. She wasn't pinned, but she was, she couldn't move. When I say pinned, like she wasn't impaled, but she couldn't move her leg. And that was a really great scene, because Michonne had to kill several walkers with the long rebarb that she found. And they were falling all on top of her, adding weight. But Rick was able to save her in that moment. And that's when I felt that was the key to addressing the precariousness. But then he, before he went into the apartment, said, well, this side is not affected yet. So we knew we had time, and that's all that mattered. And let's be real, that sex didn't last more than 15, 20 minutes. It's been 8 years. I will say the one nitpick you could have was the sun setting and the way it got dark and the sun came back up. I was like, okay. It wasn't not noticeable, so I feel the need to address it, but it did not bother me one bit. Because, as I stated previously, it all flowed within the telling of the story. There has recently been some Rick hateration. I love Michonne, but I will not hate Rick just because the relationship is going through a phase that she's completely understanding of. That is also very understandable. So I don't know why there's a need to hate Rick or Michonne, because they both are getting it for not understanding the other, which is a little immature, in my humble opinion, to assess and analyze their behavior. But I think a lot of Rick's mental anxiety and the paralyzing feel, these are types of conditions that many unfortunately don't know how to have the empathy for, or have maybe the experience to comprehend, because there's many layers to Rick's anxiety. Someone made a comment of, well, the CRM didn't really do anything to him, which is a naive statement because they kept him trapped. He tried to leave and they took him. Sometimes you have to look for the things that are not said, not just spoon-fed to you. There was a place with Safe Harbor. He went there on his escape too, and they burned everybody there, took off their shoes and burned them, and he wasn't able to get away. The third time he tried to get away, he wasn't able to get away. The fourth time, he felt very much, it reminds me of that speech that Hannah Gross's character gave in The Haunting of Bly Manor, where she's talking about a glue trap. And when you're in a glue trap, you become so desperate to become unstuck that you're willing to chew off your own hand or your own foot just to get out of that. And that's exactly what happened to Rick. He was in such a moment of desperation. And this was only, what, a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, was his last escape attempt. So it's not even like, oh man, I did one and I did two. It took him years of fighting before he was able, or before he was at that moment. And that's just, and a lot of people say it, that it didn't work out. He didn't get away. That wasn't the point. It, sometimes when you're that at that level, you're willing to do anything, even for the chance. And I don't know if the full grasping of that is met in the audience. I don't want to blame it on mediocre writing and other television shows, but I kind of do, because I do think that the way in which, like, Marvel too handles mental trauma is very blasé. And I feel here they more realistically portrayed what that meant to the person. And when you are that done, what do you do? Like, I've been watching Rick all season, and he is like a person trapped in a circle. Doesn't matter where he turns, he has no out. You cannot mentally sustain yourself in that state. So for him, when he said he died, which I don't think I fully took on, because I thought, hey, maybe there was some fire still left in there. And then to learn that, no, he was empty. He could not see her face anymore and chose not to, because dealing with that pain of not being able to go away, to not be able to get away, that only led to his death. And he knew that she was out there. He knew his family was out there. So the only thing he had to turn to was Okafor's mission. And Okafor's mission became his life up until he was reunited with Michonne again. And that's when we get that great moment of him revealing that, you came back and made me feel alive again. And I was terrified. I didn't know what to fucking do. And it's that anxiety, that crippling fear, that led to this repetition of, you have to give me the PRB. We have to go back. I have to. You know who also was in this mantra? Morgan, season 4. I have to clear. I have to, Rick. I have to. He could not go back with them and rejoin society because he did not want to care about anyone. Carol went through the same little phase of, let me go off the grid because it's too hard to open myself up to that type of disappointment and heartache once again, because I don't think I will recover from that. And I did the first time. And it leads back to that conversation in season 6 or 7. I believe season 7, Say Yes, where they had that moment where you saw Michonne thought Rick was dead and she was done. Didn't matter them babies was at home. She was done. Judith was at home at that time. She was done. And she said, I don't think I can live without you. And he said, no, we can. But they've almost had a reversal of roles where he's like, no, I can't live without you. I'm not going to be able to survive that without you. I die. And the only way I was able to even continue moving forward was to try to convince myself I was making the world better for you. Now, this Rick CRM plan, it was never attainable. I know there are many that may disagree with that, but personally, I think, bearing my comparison last episode, what she said was absolutely correct. Like, maybe Jadis has this information, so we ain't gonna find a way to get up in her room and get that information and kill her, then go home. Because this seems like there is a solution to the problem and you're not considering the solution at all. Just like you're not considering at all fighting against the CRM. Another big response from the fandom is, well, the CRM can't be beat. I don't believe that. I don't, not based on its setup. Yes, they are clearly better equipped. Clearly, they have a lot more stuff than others at this time period. But that was what? The governor? That was Negan? That was the governor again? How many times have we went up against someone in which we are the David in this situation against Goliath? But you find a way or you die fighting. This is the choices that you make. It's choices people make every single day. And I think that it does matter whether or not you decide to cower in fear or stand in not only your own authority, but stand against something that is so negatively impacting the world, right? And Michonne and Rick have never been self-preservationists. They, you know, maybe lesser people would be, but Rick, particularly before the zombie apocalypse happened, dedicated his life to serving the community for the better against things that would be destructive. So yes, when Michonne keeps saying it's not you, it's because it fundamentally is not him, not the person she met at all, who wouldn't even hand her over to the governor to avoid a fight. So why the hell would she expect him to come up against a threat to their family, threat to their safety, and not think, well, let's try. Let's come up with a game plan. Maybe we don't stay at Alexandria. Maybe we do. There's tunnels underneath the fucking city. Remember how we survived Negan's attack? So to say that there's nothing to be done, that you can't try, you know, some people would think, you know, I don't like taking those chances. But me personally, against a fascist regime where 10% of the people are going out and genociding the population, that's eventually, like I said last episode, you kick that shit down the road, eventually it's going to show up. And I think Rick's plan to be a one-man changing machine is just as naive as Okafor revealing that he didn't even actually have a plan.
That just makes no fucking sense. I mean, it's just bullshit. Fuck. Oh my.
Point being, the CRM is not nearly as infallible, I think, as many are making it out to be. And I don't know why you would make that automatic assumption just because they, yes, chlorine gassed a group of travelers No one knows about these things. That seems to be forgotten. That's a secret. Knowledge is a weapon, just as much as those bombs. And I would love to see how much of the Civic Republic and the rest of the CRM would be still on the upper echelons of the red band CRM soldiers that are okay with certain types of killing. He's building an authoritarian government around his own ideology. The book that he gave him last episode was all about justification for killing innocent people. Rick gets too far into that shit. Rick ain't changing shit. He's gonna end up just like Thorne, which was the whole point of Thorne's characterization to begin with. And we'll get into her in a little bit because there's a lot of misunderstanding and really rude comments in comparison to that character. But yeah, his one man goal of going in there and changing it. Now stop the killing. How? How are you going to I think that he may overestimate his own ability to be able to really change. And then how long is that going to take? And how many more people are going to die before those changes actually happen? His plan is not a good plan. I'm never going to be like, oh, I mean, I see it his way. I don't see it your way, Rick, any more than Michonne saw it his way. We are given a short amount of time on this earth. We need to spend it with the people we love while we can love them. And sure, protecting those people are very important, but we can also do that by being with them instead of going on a sacrificial campaign that may and most likely, with the odds, not end in your favor.
And his name is Bruh.
I also vehemently am against communists, the way in which communism has been made in Russia type of governments. And if you follow Russian politics, you would see why I have such a very visceral negative emotion when it comes to anything regarding joining the CRM if it's not the Civic Republic. I think all you need to do is drop a few information about what they did to Omaha and people might start rebelling. Not all. I do think that some of the CRM army, sure, will be on the other person's side, but I think that if anything, that makes more enemies that they would have to fight because you did something that was, in all intents and purposes, a war crime. There's no justification for killing 90,000 people because I didn't like their policies. That's not, And I really, maybe people don't know about the Omaha thing. I picked up on that shit real quick and I didn't even watch The World Beyond. But all of those things are why I'm very anti-CRM and Rick joining CRM, in case you wanted to know. The moment Michonne walks out of the door and Rick has the ultimatum and he's having that panic attack, which he has too, another source of his anxiety, which I have not talked about, which, and I should have really brought this up earlier, is we haven't even touched on the trauma of losing a limb, because that ultimately changes you too. It's not just this ideology of being stuck in a prison where he can't escape, but he also lost a limb and now has to live with what one would call a disability. I say that with quotation marks, but it certainly is a different way in which you see your body. And we all know our esteem comes from how we look and feel. And Rick feeling like he failed and then losing a part of his body, this isn't like Negan. Like, Negan did work on Rick, but that's mostly because he humiliated him. This is psychological damage. This is I've been trapped for so long that I no longer have the memories to sustain me of the people that keep me who I am. And now I'm no longer that person. So now this isn't like Negan. I made that same comparison and I get it. But seeing at the end of this episode, I can't say that anymore. They did a lot of damage and it just wasn't. And it was all, I love that it was not physical. It was all mental. And sometimes that's harder to empathize with. But I certainly felt his pain all through these four episodes into the emotional revelation of him admitting that his whole plan to get into the CRM and move forward and put in Okafor's plan. And I like that he acknowledged that he knows that Thorne is gone. It was all just an excuse to avoid going home. And you knew that the minute he was told about his son. We've been waiting for this RJ reveal and it came in a manner that we wasn't expecting because Michonne was in her moment. We gonna get to her because she was so sassy this episode. And she let slip that, what do I tell your children? And he has a moment of,
what did he say?
She reveals that she named him after his daddy. We call him RJ. He's almost 8. Thank you, Busy, for giving me the correct timeline. And he just absolutely brushes over that, puts his face down. You don't see his eyes because he cannot even acknowledge that or accept that that has happened to him. Because, and I feel like there's going to be a lot more conversations, the joy, but then eventually it's going to hit him a little bit how much he's missed. But I love that she explained to him that they call you Judith and RJ exchanged stories about what you did. And he calls himself the little brave man based on the brave man. And later on, Rick says, I'm not the brave man. And he tells Michonne to leave and to go home. I was taken. You have a choice. So you should go home. After she reveals, very importantly, that she does indeed feel guilt over the fact that she left her children behind to come look for him. And that if anything happened to them while she's been away this year, she's not going to be able to forgive herself for that. But this is Michonne acknowledging to Rick that you're not alone with your anxieties, with your possible feelings of failure, with your own insecurities. And so I love that she gave him that before he decided he wanted to try to push her away as much as he possibly could, which is what he did last episode by effectively trying to break up with her. When he can't look at her for more than 5 seconds without falling into her eyes with his lips following suit. Drunk in love, we've been all night. Love, love, we've been all night. You saw his expression when she was undressing. She took off that CRM gear so quick. I like that she was in male clothing attire. Once again, the gender roles are kind of reversed just a bit in their relationship. And it's truly always been this way. We Rishoners know the truth. And she does use her feminine wiles in that moment because she turned around, saw him like, oh. Absolutely gorgeous shot of Danai. Her looking through her braids. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But eventually he does end up revealing in one of the most profoundly emotional scenes that they end up taking Carl away from him. Because what we were seeing in his dreams was him trying to mentally stay close to his family. That's how he also was fighting. And that's what I brought up last episode, that Rick is mentally strong. We're saying he's broken. Yes, true, but he did last a very long time. But eventually, he couldn't remember his son, and he couldn't remember her, the thing that he started, this apocalypse, only caring about, and then that transition to Michonne. And now, with both of them gone, he simply disappeared from himself. And then he couldn't get that back. That's what he was saying to the one guy, that I couldn't remember his face. We thought, at least I thought, it was because of his injury, but it's because he absolutely forgot his son. And that's devastating. Not being able to remember someone. He simply just broke down in that moment. And let me tell you something. When Michonne grabbed that phone and it was Carl, and then they showed us Carl, I was bawling my ass out. Like, during Andy's scene, there was tears coming down. But then the minute they fucking saw him put that sheriff's hat on Carl, I lost it. I lost it. And she said, what would Carl want you to do? And we know what Carl would want. We know. Oh, I miss that boy so much. I miss him so much. I don't think I cried as much in the episode as I did. Like, it took me, I think, a little while to process Carl's death. I wasn't quite as sad, and I was very pragmatic at first about it. But man, I think that it really hit home just how important he really was, not only to Rick, but to Michonne. That was her best friend. And she has, even when he was lost, kept his memory, kept his essence alive by reading the note to Negan. So yeah, that she always carries him with her. She will never forget that boy. That it all was just poetry, just like his note. Oh, let's get to sassy Michonne. Because as I said, she was using all of her tools in the trade this episode. She knows he can't resist her. He cannot resist. He didn't even go over to the PRB. I love that he didn't at any point try to take it from her. He asked her. And he said, we need to go back. He kept saying that over and over again. Because he knew that if anyone was going to bring him back, it was her. And he was just fighting this whole entire episode on the defense to not allow her in. And her frustration with him, but also the patience and the love. Because when you're deprogramming someone from a cult, it's easy to say, well, you're on some shit right now. You can link up with me when you're not into that shit. You cut them off. But in reality, that is ultimately how the cults win. So you have to ask questions. You have to try to get them to see their own reasoning, which is exactly what she did. Like, okay, you want to tell me about Jadis in the situation? I love that she brought up killing Jadis not once, but twice. Now fuck that bitch. And Rick clearly thought this one through. He thought, maybe I can get her on board on this plan.
And you fail.
I like how after he broke down everything to her, she's like, okay, I'm mad at you for lying to me. Okay, you're saying I wouldn't have left if you told me the truth. Fine. We're here. I'm upset about that. The note was bullshit. I think that you're lying, but okay, is this it? This is our plan. We go back, we find the evidence, we kill Jadis, and then we go home. And he is still resistant to that idea because he doesn't want to go home. And that's what she ends up honing in on and asks if he still loves her, which he replies, always, he never stopped loving her. And just like the gun in season 5, when he was wiling, but she said, I'm still with you. And he tried to give her the gun and then she just kept pushing it down. That reminded me when she gave him the PRB. Like, I trust you. If you're saying we need to go back, we're going to go back. And this is our plan. This is what we're going to do. Then you have them seeing the helicopter, which gives them the out they need. And Rick reveals that he is not going home. Michonne, at this point, is wondering, how did we get here? Because this is not how I imagined our reunion. She talks about Nat a lot in this episode, and I'm glad. Because A, her grief is still very recent. Two, she spent a year with that man. Almost the exact same length that she spent with Andrea. And it's her relationship with Andrea that led her eventually to Rick to begin with. And it's her relationship with Nat and him having her back despite, from the beginning, never thinking that this was going to end with a happy ending, was still supporting her. And he eventually led her back to Rick, which is rather beautiful and poetic as well. And she is trying to understand once again where Rick is coming from. This is when he explains how he can change the CRM. She brings up, I saw you standing behind her. And I thought to myself, he's a prisoner. We got to break the fuck out. He was a little incredulous. Like, I told you to not show them who you are. And you broke the kill record. And you threw us out of a goddamn helicopter. I don't like the way you are with them. So I decided that we need to prison break. And that's exactly what they did. But she also inadvertently saved their lives. They should be in the clear. No one's going to come for them. Everyone's going to think they passed away. Even if a lot of people saying Jadis, even if Jadis thought maybe they got away, she can't go get a reclamation team and find them. She has no justification for that unless she admits to the CRM that she knows more than she does. So if she does come after them, it's got to be by herself. I think she absolutely is going to go after them for reasons that have everything to do with her own sense of possessiveness and ownership over Rick. Yes, she saved his life, but for her own personal gains. And I think that she's gotten quite used to having this type of power. There was a good comment in a previous podcast that I listened to, the Cast of Us, I think is the name of the podcast, where someone wrote in and talked about if Jadis was a male and Rick was a female, she would effectively be sexually harassing him, which she has been. I think she does it to fuck with him, but I do think that it's still sexual harassment because he's not interested. And now the moment, like she's saying, oh, they can find out. But why would they find out unless you told them? You know, we would have to find you. I would know where you are. It's all about the risk to her position. But if she decides to go after them now, I know for a fact that it's more than just, or maybe she's so down for the CRM. She knows that Rick and Michonne will be a threat to the CRM. And she wants to annihilate that to protect her position within the CRM. I think it's a combination of those factors because I thought it was weird with her statement rewatching it last episode. When she said that our fates are intertwined, you, me, and Michonne. Because up until like 2 days ago, her fate was not intertwined with Michonne, but she made sure she intertwined herself with their fate. So I would love to, I'm really curious to see next episode how and why she chooses to respond. But I don't think it's going to be with a reclamation team because of what I previously said. But he's got his perfect out. Michonne doesn't know why he is a prisoner that stays in his cage. It's kind of like Negan. Because he has nowhere to go. That was a different reason. Rick has somewhere to go, somewhere to be, and family that would greet him coming back home. Michonne, once again, I love how they had different breaks. Because that moment where she was walking around, it's almost like, I'm out. Like, you're packing up your bags, but instead of putting clothes in a suitcase, she's just grabbing weapons, the kitchen knife. She throws down the lamps. She tells him that he's lying, it's going to be too late. And she leaves, and she expects him to follow her. And even though it's breaking her heart that he doesn't immediately come after her, she waits. And waits as long as she feels her pride should allow her to wait before she ends up going downstairs. And that's when Rick has the panic attack and goes after her. And they had a lot of moments of they clearly still love each other. Whatever was just said, it did not break them at all. And his consistent need to, like, I'm never going to leave you. Like, that's never going to happen, not ever. And she's like, well, I'm glad to hear that, even under the circumstances. Their little back and forth with the walker when they both hit it in the eye. And she's like, he's like, I had that one. And she's like, I had it. And then he takes his hand out and then throws the blood on her. And she's like, really?
So, apologize, bitch.
There you go.
Shout out to her calling him Commando. That's my movie, first and foremost. I never thought I would love Arnold Schwarzenegger and Ray Don Chong in an action movie together, but I was shipping the shit out of that. She's like, okay, Commando. Took my weapon. Goddamn defensible position. We'd always be talking some shit sometimes. And then he gave her shit for not hugging the wall. And then they get their moment of discovering what this building, it's a place of innovation. And then this leads to another argument. And Michonne saying later on too that she lied. She doesn't know how Judith is. She didn't tell him she was affected by the chlorine gas because she didn't want to admit her own vulnerability. But she knew she had to. And that in order to reveal her own inner turmoil, then it was going to help Rick open towards his own. Everything about that sex scene was romantic, with Michonne being on top, because despite having one hand, he sure can still pick her ass up. It's like, oh no, I don't care how many hands I have, I will be getting it around that ass. But he ends up having a panic attack in the middle of their lovemaking, and she's able to coax him through that. I had out a goddamn magnifying glass trying to see every bit of Andy's body. Ooh, that sex scene was hot. Ooh, it was hot. Especially when he made that face. You know what face we talking about. Andrew Lincoln reminds me of George Clooney. The older he gets, the more fuckable he becomes. He just ages with increasing sexuality, and it's ridiculous. And then he admits that he still wants to go back to CRM, but she at this point's like, you're lying. And I don't even have the energy to be mad because you just dicked me all the way down in the way that I remember. So I know you're still in there. And she tells him that you need to sit down and we need to figure out where we're going, what we're doing, and where we're going and how we're doing it. And that's when she brings up Judith and admits that he's actually hurting her, which is something that I think she didn't want to acknowledge to herself or to him, but she needs him to hear this. You are hurting me and you're making me someone I don't recognize, because that's what love does to you, especially when it's that kind of love. She says, our love cannot be denied. So I need you to try to tell me what they took from you. And then we get the reveal that it was Carl, and that his fear has taken over. His anxiety has taken over. All he sees is dread. He cannot see any light at the end of that tunnel. And then she shows him the drawing of Carl and assures him that, hey, the world is a place of uncertainty. That is not going to change. But what we have is real. Your kids are real. I'm real. What we have, what we're building, all of that is real. And all we can do really is love on each other and get through that. come with what, go home, figure out how to protect our people, protect our family. Because as much as I keep saying Alexandria is their home is where their family is. If you know where I'm about to be at, you best believe I'm going to be somewhere the fuck else when you decide to show up. I don't know why this is a hard thing to understand. I can understand if Alexandria was going 9 years strong. They were rebuilding when she left. There's a lot of reasons that would make me say, so guys, I think we need to go somewhere else. And then even if she gets back home, she'll find out that there's somewhere else they need to go or they can go, called the Commonwealth. So they have options, even if they don't know they have options, which is why I'm like, you can't say you don't have options when you don't even have all the information, or something's an impossibility or a certainty when it's not. I think that a lot of people were convinced that the CRM is a certainty, that them attacking Alexandria is a certainty. And I can see by listening to the people who are making threats at you, one would believe that, but that's what they do. They control you by keeping you aligned, by going after what you're most fearful of. So the suspension of disbelief when it's convenient. I had that on my list of things to talk about, because I do think in a show where zombies are running around, I need some people to stop. I think they like to nitpick because they think it's funny, and fine. If that's what you want to make your podcast about, fine. But I also think that it's a little ridiculous on the premise alone, which leads to influencers. The wrong influencers are influencing people, because there's a lot of commentary that I think is layered in this series that is absolutely utterly missed by some of the podcasts with the biggest crowds. Which is kind of sad, because it's putting ideas that are mimicked all across the fandom. And unless I'm with a Rishoner, like a Rishoner who knows how to type up a scholarly assessment of an episode, we're losing a lot of those very profound bits of the writing in the script. And that's unfortunate, in my humble opinion. I don't know why people, well, some are hating Michonne from last week's episode, saying that she should have played along better, this, that, and the other thing. I have a lot to say about that, because I do think part of it is a microaggression. And I don't know if I brought this up last episode, and I can't remember or not, about being told not to be who you are. I feel like I did. At least I wrote about it to someone. But being upset with her because she was given a blanket context of don't show them who you are, a leader. What the fuck is that supposed to mean? Her first response was knee jerk. Like, someone was in trouble. I don't trust the CRM. I'm going to help them. That I happen to look badass in the process is just my DNA. I don't know what you want me to do about that. I can't rewrite it. I was just trying to be fucking efficient. Yes, it looks super cool, but then you have Rick lying to her. After that point, we didn't have a plan together. I trusted you because you said you were going to get me out of here. And I thought that was the plan. I was playing this little bit of role until I can get out. But I'm not Carol. I'm not going into the CRM and planning on being some type of spy or living here or acclimating. That's not what the fuck I did. I followed my husband here because he promised he would get us away. And I'm thinking that's at the earliest opportunity. And so I was just doing that. Now my husband tells me he's not leaving without an explanation. I'm pissed the fuck off. I don't care what the fuck is the situation around here. You didn't tell me the situation around here. I'm going to be who the fuck I am. And maybe if you want me to understand, you'll say some words to make me understand, which you didn't. You told me you used emotional blackmail by saying, if you loved me, you would have left. Get the fuck out of here. What was she supposed to do? Why are you mad at Michonne? I wasn't even mad at Rick. But even if you had to pick someone to even say, okay, maybe he's being a little dickish. It was in Rick. I wouldn't even say he was being dickish. He was just being Rick. I know this man. I'm not judging him for some of the things that he does when it's in reaction to his emotions, because he's never a rational person. Maybe that's, and we've had a discussion about that where some males don't see that correlation, but it's been there. It's been there for a long, long, long time. And because my back is killing me and this podcast is almost an hour already, because I threw my back out, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole to point out all of those times, but yeah. What else did I want to say in this episode? Maybe just a small tidbit about Thorne. Someone said, I really can't stand her accent. That's a you problem. Why you being a dickhead fool? Stop being a dickhead. It's also a microaggression. Like, I can't stand her because I can't understand what she's saying and I just don't like her. If you don't like the characterization, that's fine. If you say you don't like her because you can't understand what she's saying, as if she somehow needs to change herself to be understood by you, that's weird. That's just, and I heard a female say it too, and they said it in such a way. It's like, stop, it's so fucking stupid accent. And I get it, the point of, oh, I'm heard her speak in a different accent on a different show. I'm just not used to this accent. That's a different statement than I don't like her accent. South African is an accent just as much as any other accent is. We all have accents depending on our region in the country. Okay. And when you talk to people, when you're trying to understand them, it is your responsibility to listen. And it may take a minute, sure, but I've never once not understood what she said. And there's this also thing called subtitles. If it really, really you needed to catch, I don't feel the way it was said. It was everything against her as like a Black South African woman and nothing to do with her characterization. And that bothers me. And a lot of people have taken that stance without realizing that she herself too is a victim who's just been brainwashed and now is moving in a direction that's sad, because she was someone that was, at least I always thought she was, a likable character who couldn't see, who was a little blinded by what the CRM was and then became completely blinded with its goal. And it's based on the exact same thing that was underlining Rick's entire arc, which is fear. So I don't know. I know it's a objective or subjective thing to like or dislike a character, but I do feel that there needs to be more, at least if you're liking, disliking her for reasons, please label those reasons. And those reasons need to be based on, well, she tried to kill Michonne. Okay, I don't like her because she tried to kill Michonne. That's never brought up. The reasons that are she's not likable are everything to do with her ethnicity, and I hate it. I really do. Brilliant episode, wonderful writing, wonderful way and use of the set, great dialogue. Acting on 10, my favorite episode of The Walking Dead, behind Clear and No Way Out. And I think the fourth one maybe Say Yes, but I also feel like it's competing with the one where she killed all the kids, because that was a really good episode for me. And that is where I'm going to leave off so that we can jump into feedback. If I have any additional thoughts to add, I will add it after Mimi says what she has to say about this fantastic episode. Let's hop into the mailbag.
What up, Stina? It's Mimi. This is feedback for The Ones Who Live, episode 4. I'm pretty sad, but also excited. I can't believe we only have 2 episodes left. I really enjoyed this episode, and then when I found out it was Denai that wrote it, and that this is the one she wanted to write, I was even more excited. It flows so well. It was giving very much married couple, and they haven't been around each other for years. I mean, if it's 9 years, like you say, that's almost a fucking decade. That's a long time to not be around someone. A lot of things could change. They could change, and Rick did. You know, everything that happened was so very... It was very organic, and I think that's what I liked the most about it. Like, it would have been unrealistic for them to get off the helicopter and just start smashing each other. And I was even under the impression that this might not be the episode that they actually have an intimate connection, which, you know, would have made sense considering what is actually happening. I really enjoyed it. It was just very... well written. I think that I appreciate it even more after I watched it the second time. Now, I learned my lesson. I did not go on any kind of Twitter looking through anything. I haven't even looked since I watched it because I knew I was just going to record on Tuesday. Just a side note, as someone who only works 3 days a week, I don't know how y'all work life with just 2 days off. Like, I think the reason I work at a hospital is because I like having 4 days off. Like, 3 days off seem like, you know, a good amount of time. But when it's just one in between my work shifts or two, I don't feel like that's enough time. Like, I don't feel like I was able to do anything. Like, Derek's 13th birthday is coming up, so I'm trying to get invitations out. I'm trying to, like, reserve all of the things that we need to do, make sure that I got enough food. It's a lot. So I've been trying to like do everything. I know his birthday is a party is a month away, but I want everything to be finalized because this is going to be like a bigger party just because he is turning 13. And we never had a housewarming, which Darren's family really are there butthurt about it, but you know, we moved in and then we went to on vacation to Paris, so we really never even got settled in. We're honestly not even settled in now. We just got a month to get it together, at least fake it till we make it, and that's what we're gonna do. But these 2 days that I had off, like I ran errands, I cleaned up, I just don't know how people function. I'm really trying to get in shape because I'm sick of looking at myself, and my scrubs are starting to get a little tight around the mid drift area and my thighs. So I mean, I'm not buying a bigger pair of scrubs. I absolutely not. I wear a medium, and I'm gonna stay wearing a medium. If I have to go to a large, I'm gonna be mad. I have already a couple of pair of larges, but I mean, I'm not buying no more. So I just don't understand how I'm expected to do all this stuff. Like, I really don't feel like it's enough time in the day. And I really haven't even watched anything. Vikings only have 11 days left. And then it's apparently going to be gone off of Hulu. So I'm trying to finish watching that. I just feel like it's not enough time in the day. And I was like, let me just watch this episode twice. Make sure I got my thoughts together. And then on my way to work, like I usually do, it's a 2-hour drive. I got to drive to get to work. So I was like, let me just suck it up and record in my car because that kills two birds with one stone. So here I am. I don't know what people are saying. I don't know how people are feeling about it. I don't even listen to any podcasts. Maybe I'll see if I can find a couple for this show, especially since it's only 6 episodes. It'll be nice to hear what other people's thought of it. But I'm definitely going to wait until after everything airs, because I don't want to listen to other people's thoughts. I feel like I already generally know what you're going to say, so your thoughts are going to really align with mine. And even if they don't, you always have your reasons. And I just, to me, it's easier to wrap my mind around things when it's like an overview. Because I can be like, okay, I can see where they're coming from. Or, oh, okay, that doesn't make sense. I don't know where they got that from. Interesting point of view. Or, this is stupid, let me turn it off. So I don't have to invest a lot of things, you know. Anyway, what I really enjoyed was the way that Michonne just casually told Rick that he had children. When she was like, you know, that note you wrote me was just gold. And because she was looking at that book that she put in her fanny pack because she's going to bring it to her daughter. And then she was like, oh, you know what, why don't you write another note to your children? And then when he was like, wait, you said children, the way she like smacked her lips and rolled her eyes and walked away, that was so funny. I was like, she really, she is so mad right now. She was like, and she walked away and rolled her eyes. It was so funny. I don't know. I guess the first time I watched it, Rick's reaction to like was so nonchalant, it was kind of underwhelmed. But then after I watched it a second time and I really thought about it, I was like, okay, he's still in this place of denial. And I love that even though it's been 9 years, Michonne, she knew something. Like, you're not telling me all of the truth. I don't like who you are when you're with them. I don't like how you're acting. Like, you know, when the helicopter crashed after Okafor died and Michonne was like, you know, killing all them soldiers because they fucked up and that's the reason why she lost a year of her life and her search with Nate, because they got bombed with that gas. So she was taking all them soldiers out, and when she saw Rick, he immediately switched sides. So she was like, okay, he is definitely my Rick again. But then she, you know, as soon as she got back to the RMC with Rick, you know, he reverted back to, you know, the Rick that is just a shell of himself. And it made sense because he really started to think and act differently once he had that visit from Jadis. And I don't know. I don't know if I necessarily believe Jadis when she says she has a note for if anything happens to her. So what if you die just of natural causes? Like, what if your fucking helicopter falls out of the sky? What if it's shot out of the sky? What if you're shot on a mission? Like, that has nothing to do with Rick. So what I'm hearing is Alexandria is in danger no matter what, because you have paperwork showing where everything is. So what's to stop me from just killing you and leaving? At least if I kill you now and go there, I can have time to prepare. Rick don't know Daryl isn't there, and I mean, I guess neither does Michonne. But still, like, I don't know the circumstances behind why Daryl left, but I know that he wouldn't have left Alexandria like empty-handed and without any kind of person to protect it. So I'm assuming there's got to be people there that can hold down Alexandria, especially with Judith and RJ being there. If Daryl don't do nothing, he gonna protect his niece and nephew. Like, that's for sure. Anyway, like I said, I don't necessarily know if I believe Jadis. I mean, I guess we have no reason to believe that she is lying, but I don't personally believe her, because it's if anything happens to me. Like, you're a cunt, and I'm sure I'm not the only person in this place that doesn't fucking like you. So if somebody else kill you, is that gonna be on me too? or is it only if you die and I leave? Like, there's just, she wasn't very specific. So like I said, I don't know if I believe her. I also know that she has a hard-on for Rick that she's had for a long time, and he saved her life. She claims that's why she saved him, but we know that wasn't it. They would have left your ass right where you were if you wouldn't have had to be, and that's obvious. And you rose up in the ranks. Rick must have been the last person that you needed to, you know, trade in order for you to, you know, be able to be in this new civilization. I don't know exactly how much we're actually going to see. I don't know how much they're actually going to cover, but with only 2 episodes left, I'm assuming like Rick and Michonne are going to make it to Alexandria, but like, what is the end game here? Are we going to say that they're going to go back to the RMC, the CRM, and get rid of them? Are they going to try and make it better? Or are they just going to prepare Alexandria for when they come? Because like, realistically, I mean, I guess you could have create bomb shelters, and I think they actually do have bomb shelters in Alexandria, but how are you going to protect them from a gas being dropped on them by a helicopter? Are y'all going to build something to detect if you have a helicopter? I don't know. I don't know realistically how they would prepare Alexandria for the attack unless they just picked up and left. And I don't think they would do that because they worked hard to make Alexandria what it is now. I love the scene when Michonne got trapped underneath that chandelier and Rick, you know, wouldn't leave her, and they got her out of it as he was protecting her from those walkers, and he was like, you never have to thank me. I thought for sure after they, you know, after that moment, and then like they looked at each other and then they made love, and there was a moment there where at first I thought it was Rick, you know, climaxing, but it was just something different about it. And then he like flipped her over, and I was like, I felt like it's like, did he just like unlock his subconscious? Like, what? I'm not quite sure exactly what that moment was supposed to be, but it was something that just between him and Michonne that just seemed like it was a very important moment. Maybe he did climax, I don't know, but he was like, his breathing was very ragged, he was staring at her all intensely, and she put her his hand on her heart. I don't know exactly what that moment was supposed to be. I mean, I guess he could have finished and then decided that it wasn't over and let's do some more. Dudes do shit like that all the time, so I don't know. But that whole scene, and then afterwards when they're in bed talking about RJ, and then when we finally get the reveal of why Rick is being this way, and it was just so, I wasn't expecting it, you know, like, what did they take away from you, Carl? Like, I was a blubbering ass mess. I wasn't expecting that. I thought he was just gonna say, you know, they took away my life, or they took away my will to fight, or they took away, you know, my ability to foresee a different future. It was so much deeper than that. Like, they took him away. They took him. Like, he couldn't see Carl anymore. Like, and then they took her away. So he just became a shell of himself. He was like, I was alive, but I wasn't alive. And, you know, this hope that you're giving me, like, I can't recover from them taking you away from me again. Like, that shit was super deep. I enjoyed it, and it was so unexpected. It had me all emotional in my feels. And then, you know, they became the boss couple that they are, and they got out, and they found a damn truck that had a bunch of fuel in it. And now they're on their way to Alexandria. And I don't remember where the CRM is. The RCM? Is it it's CRM. I'm pretty sure it's I don't even know what the C stands for. Republic? I don't fucking know. You know wherever they are. I don't know the city that they're in. I don't quite know where it's at. I don't know. I don't even think I remember where Alexandria is. Maybe Alexandria might be in Virginia. I don't remember. But I do know that, you know, that the plan is just to drive there. It can't be seamless because that would be boring. So I'm interested to see how this is going to work. I saw the preview for the next episode, but I don't take much into that because, you know, I know they try to mislead people all the time. So we'll see. But I'm really excited to see where their journey goes. And there's only 2 episodes left. I'm just really sad that it's almost over, but I'm so happy this reignited my love for this show because The Walking Dead was like what, like I would say my favorite show, like before The Flash, before, like I enjoyed Supernatural, but I was never a super fan. Like I would say that if I had to be a super fan for anything, it would be The Walking Dead. I even went to the Walker Stalker festivals that they have when they came to Illinois. I met Sasha Symphonique, and I got her autograph. I ran into a couple of the lame ones, just literally, like, you know, remember the guy from Alexandria who, he had curly hair, he was so lame, and he ended up dying with Glenn. We thought he got Glenn killed, but Glenn ended up making it out. That guy, I was literally in line for nachos and I bumped into him. I didn't care enough about him to be like, oh my God, you're so and so, but I did literally run into him. He wasn't, like, nobody cares about him. So, you know, his line was probably empty. Andrew Lincoln wasn't there and neither was Denai, Denai was there, but I was with Derek and the line was long as hell and he wasn't gonna wait. But anyway, what else? I feel like there's something I'm missing. I wonder if we're going to see Pearl again. I wonder if we're going to see anybody from the actual Walking Dead show. I can't wait for Rick to meet RJ and see Judith again. Because the actress that plays Judith, I mean, it's been since Denai left, it has been like 4 years, right? Wasn't it like 2021, 2020? I don't remember. But she's got to be a teenager by now. And if it's been 9 years, it's been what? Like two, three years. It has to be like 2 years since Michonne went to go find Rick. So if she was 12, then she's a teenager now. So anyway, I'm just looking forward to with these next couple episodes. I'm just going to take it how I can. And just enjoy it. Until next time, love, peace, hair, grease, and Black Girl Magic, Queen of the Couch, Mimi out.
Thank you, Mimi, for your thoughts on the episode. I'm with you on the 2 days of a weekend. I don't know how, possibly, I get anything done, but it doesn't seem like it's ever all that it needs to be done. Thus far, the only podcast that I like personally that has been doing a consistent enough job where I just don't turn it off in annoyance is The Cast of Us. If you find any additional good ones, let me know. But you're right. Also, listening after the show is over, I think would have probably been a better experience for some of the other ones. Because they're just really frustrating. I, too, loved Michonne's lip smack there. I like how she used her sexuality, sensuality to say, you want to call them here, Rick? And then she's just like, yeah, I see that throbbing erection you have there. And he took a whole minute, couldn't even answer. But I did love that moment. Because it was like, I'm mad at you for other reasons. And that's what you took away from that conversation. A good point on Jadis. I think the bitch lying too. Personally, I don't, like, her plan doesn't seem very thought out. And why wouldn't he have thought to just get the information he needs or find a way to search her ass? But I suppose because she's got a red band, it would be harder. But I don't think that hard. Now that she's now stationed in the Catskill? I don't know what you call that place in Pennsylvania, but that's where they're at. And the kid, I don't think we're going to see the kids. I don't think we're going to see RJ. I don't think we're going to see that reunion. Mainly because, A, they're not there. They're not actually not at Alexandria. They're at the Commonwealth. And the Commonwealth is now being ruled by the Kang. And I think that timeline takes place in the future. So don't quote me. Get back to me on me reading up on some other people who watched all the shows that know the timeline better. But I do think that they do need to reconcile that, but I don't see them meeting up with their kids. I would love to see it, and I will be pleasantly surprised and happy if it happens. But me personally, I think that something, Jadis is going to come after them, and they're going to find out something that's going to lead them back to, we need to fuck up the CRM at least a little bit, the higher upper echelons of folks, before we decide we're gonna leave or they die, which I don't even want to think about because I don't I don't know if I would process that properly, and that's just not, I don't think they would do it us like that, but it is The Walking Dead. It's The Walking Dead. But I honestly think they're about to go and fuck some shit up. What can they do to prepare? I don't know. Gas masks? Shit. They can start piling up on some gas masks. So if anyone drops it, it's not like you can't survive chlorine gas. It's just that you need to be somewhere where you're not breathing it in for 24 hours before it dissipates. I love that line too. You never have to thank me ever. And the other part about Jadis, I have a love-hate relationship with her because she does make an annoying villain. Like, she's not a Negan or someone you really take. She's just an annoyance, one that should have been handled a very long time ago, but has managed, because she's that type of person, to wriggle around all of the bullshit and get herself some power, because this Jadis would not have talked to, or Jadis would not have talked to Rick like this. He always had control in their situations. And so I think something's going to happen to push them backwards, because I do think that while going home should be the ultimate goal, there needs to be, someone needs to answer for Nat. I've already pointed this out. Someone's got to answer for the shit y'all did to me. And I think it's going to be something that happens where Michonne has to change her mind, because she says you have to know when to go and you have to know when to leave. And I think that that plays into it. And I know that she needs to use that danger lighter, and she needs to get, I think that she's going to have them think that they're dead by visually making them think that they're dead. Like, they're dead, dead. I don't know how it's going to happen, but they put a lot of things out there, like the purple light, the walkers that are continuing to build up, all of that out there, and the hierarchy being at this one summit meeting are all leading to Michonne fucking some shit up. Now, this comment right here, he climaxed.
We've reached the climax. We're together, now we're undone.
I cannot with you. I cannot with you. You go sit in the corner. No, girl, he had a panic attack. When you dream so much, you think it's not real. When it becomes real, he just had a moment of terror and he got lost in that for a moment. And Michonne grabbed his hand and had to pull him back. And she understood that you know, that's why she kept saying there. And even after that moment, she was even softer in her approach, because she's like, no, 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 this, we're getting closer to what is going on. And he showed her that vulnerability and her being able to see that. And like, no, he is absolutely frozen in fear. And the idea of losing him, her again, is something it sends him, his body, into an anxiety attack. So that's what that moment was. And the actor you're talking about is Nicholas, and that I know his name pisses me off. If I ever see Denier Andy coming to Ohio, I'll be there. The inn, yes, they got a car. The stick shift line got me because it was hilarious, and everyone was like, "Rick can't drive stick shift," and I'm like, "No, he doesn't have a hand. He can't drive the car because he can't use the stick shift. You know, his hand's gone." But then the baby let me drive because he just can't get enough of that butter love. As far as Judith, the actress, I do think that they, if they do go forward, they would have to recast her, as you pointed out. I would think they need to recast the little boy too, but maybe not. I know they were both in the finale of the official Walking Dead. Gimple's talked about one day getting them all together. This is supposed to be a limited series. People want a season two. A season two is not confirmed or forthcoming, but they did do the Dead City, which is the Negan show. They did do that one for a season two, and that one sucks. So maybe it doesn't, but I personally don't want to see the Maggie and Negan show. I don't give a fuck if he has a black wife now and a half mixed baby. I that he somehow lost, by the way. I keep up with the drama because I just hear it. But I'm wondering if Morgan is going to show up. There's been a lot of Morgan heavy emotions in this season. It's where Rick started. And honestly, those three working together can take down fucking anything. And we know that Morgan's got beef with the CRM, personal beef. And his last words were, "I'm going to go look for Rick Grimes," because now he has a daughter too. Yeah, girl, I'm getting all the tea. I want that. I want that to happen. And I don't know how or if it will, but I'm so down for that being the case, because we do know that Morgan is on his way to, for where he was in fear, I think. He's on his way back to Rick Grimes, back to Alexandria. We do have commentary, one comment from my YouTube channel, from SeanK3317, who says, "This is my take. Helicopter crashes after Rishone jumps out. The CRM thinks they died. Rishone talks things out and plan the next moves. Rick goes back and gets the echelon briefing. Michonne works in or out of the CRM. Esteban's girlfriend is a journalist, and that will help alert the local population of what is being hidden. Rishone makes it back home if the CRM is destroyed, or Rishone takes over the CRM and the kids are brought in." All of those are possibilities I like, other than they have to go to the Civic Republic. I know I keep saying CRM, so I guess I should clarify. CRM is what they're called, the Civic Republic, but there's a government side and then there's the military side. So when people say CRM and not Civic Republic, I immediately think the military side, which are the bad people. I think they're going to take out 10% of the people that they need to take out. I think that Esteban's girlfriend, journalist, could be definitely brought in, because that was just odd that they brought up that she was a journalist. That seemed like information. And this is someone on the inside that knows Rick. that can get the information out and start alerting the Civic Republic to what they're doing, what their goals are. Now, does that mean the CRM will no longer be around? No, I bet that 10% is going to, because they already built up this place in the, wherever the fuck they are having that meeting. Even if they fuck it up, it's their, they set it up for a year to be a fortified location. And then they just took out all the zombies in the area. So it could be that the CRM ends up surviving, but they do launch an attack that offers a severe blow. I agree. I think they're going back in because they have the perfect excuse. Other than Jadis, which is one person, everyone else would think, oh, your plane crashed. You ended up surviving. You jumped out. There's nothing to say they'd be looked at too suspiciously, especially if they returned to the CRM. And Rick gets that echelon briefing. I definitely think that they're going to formulate a plan. I don't know if that we're going to see the full extent of that plan, because we have to go back because Michelle doesn't have her sword. I realized that this whole entire episode. I'm like, she must have left that shit back there at the CRM. Hit it. So we need her to have her sword back. So she got to go. If you want to send feedback or have thoughts on the episode or the one coming up, blackercouch@gmail.com, you can leave a comment below. My social media will be there as well. Like, share, subscribe. If you are listening on any podcast platform, go down to the rating section, drop some stars, leave a review. Until the next time, peace, hair grease, and blacker magic.